As the beginning of school creeps up on us, it might be a good time to line up some entertaining, useful TV for the kids. Techonomics host Jason Middleton talks with an expert about what shows are best for teens and tweens when it comes to keeping those minds moving. After that, something from the news, the Federal Reserve meeting. What's on tap for America's top bank? Those topics start now.
Let's say you're watching a show that you want to watch and you feel you've earned it because you had to wrestle the remote from the kid. Okay, so you're watching this show, and let's say it's a cooking show, and they get into it too. They start tracking it and getting into the storylines. How do you navigate that? I mean, is that considered STEM and appropriate for kids, teens, and tweens, younger maybe? That's one of the topics Polly Conway and I discuss in this final segment. Polly is TV editor at CommonSenseMedia.com. We pick up our chat with some of my personal front page. I have two for you.
Got it.
Okay. Well, actually, I have an overall question before I get to these, because this is not Stump Polly
by any stretch.
But do you find that when you're watching something like a Maker type of show with a child, but you're watching it for you, right? It's an adult show. And I'm specifically thinking about the Great British Baking Show.
It's like a war in here.
I already feel I know some of the things I didn't do right.
Taking on three tricky challenges.
Sieving something into a bowl, you'll wish you were dead.
I genuinely think I'm going to cry.
From two tough judges.
It does look
disgusting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because baking is science. It's chemistry, right?
Absolutely.
And so she knows the difference between leavened and unleavened bread now because of that show. And now she knows how to prove things and she knows what that means, right? And that's a little bit above an eight-year-old, I think. But it's because of that show. And it's, by the way, the only reality show I've ever liked, but it doesn't matter. If she sees the British baking show with its high production values and its scientific applications and something, and then this confection happens at the end, very pretty and yummy, is that blowing it for a show that might be a little more geared towards her?
No way. No, it's totally not. I mean, that's what I call stealth learning and stealth science, because it's there, but you've learned something and you weren't really thinking about, oh my gosh, I'm watching this baking show because these people are hilarious and I love watching British people talk and, you know, it's just a great show.
How dry are they?
But absolutely.
But then she wants
to
make bread.
She knows how to do measurements and do all that stuff. So, I mean, whatever your kid is into, there's learning that can be created from it.
Okay, cool.
So you're fine. You're
all right, cool.
You're in the clear.
The other one I had for you that might, it's not necessarily a kid, but it might be interesting, and you may already know it. Primitive Technology.
I don't know that one.
It's a YouTube channel, right?
Okay.
And a guy goes into the woods and makes everything with his hands.
Yeah.
That's it.
Whoa.
Like he makes arrows, and he makes a whole shed. He fires his own clay roof shingles.
Yeah.
He builds furnaces. He builds traps for creeks so he can catch shrimp. And she's fascinated by it. And they vary in range from like 5 minutes to 15 minutes, depending on what he's building. There's no VO. There's no narration.
Yeah.
There's no anything. It's just him with a GoPro set up. And, of course, a lot of editing, I'm sure, happens on the other side.
Yeah.
But she's fascinated by that, too. What I find with her is if I use that primitive technology or put it in the same conversation as our modern technology, I see some kind of ecosystem happening there. But, again, am I overloading her? She seems to be into it, but, you know, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, if she's into it, I think it's fine.
Okay.
You know, if she's overloaded, she'll hit the road.
That's a good point. Yeah, she will. You're right.
So she'll be over it and overwhelmed and not want to watch it. So,
My last question for you, Polly, and thank you for coming in, because this is going to be so much fun. I noticed that you mentioned Nickelodeon once.
Mm-hmm.
No other legacy studio is in there. And I'm wondering, is this over the top situation that we're in right now and will continue forever in perpetuity? Does that preclude companies like Disney to get into the STEM space, or are they just too focused on entertainment, or is this because they're for profit?
I think it's complicated. What I've noticed is that Amazon Prime really came out of the gate with some super solid learning, and I think that the rest of the streaming kind of was like, oh my gosh, we got to step it up.
I see.
There's still a little bit of a slight disconnect between what's on what we call linear TV and what's available over the top. But I think that we don't have too much further to go before it's all one big blob of everything that you can just watch. And that's really interesting to see develop.
It is. It's kind of scary in a way, too, right? If you're a content creator, because you can get lost in the noise.
Right. Because everyone's a content creator.
Right.
At this point.
At this point, everybody has an audience.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Which is why sites like yours exist.
Yeah.
To help people like me find out what's appropriate and okay.
We're trying.
All right. Well, it's great stuff. Polly, thank you so much for coming in. This is a ton of fun. I hope we can have you back in the fall or the next time you see a new slew or wave of stuff coming, okay?
I would love to do that.
All right. Cool. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
That was the conclusion of our themed show this week. We spoke with Common Sense Media's Polly Conway about what we're calling STEM You Can Stream. Videos and shows online that will keep your child's brain active while entertaining them and most likely the parents, too. Before we totally exit the topic of videos for children, there was a rather abhorrent example this week of how kids' programming is not immune to hate speech and racists. The BBC posted a video of what Britain was like under Roman rule. It showed a historically accurate multicultural society.
It is 1,800 years ago. The Romans have invaded and taken over much of Britain. They build new forts and Roman roads that link the areas they've conquered.
Well, one alt-right character, let's call him a spokesperson, tweeted that the BBC video was wrong, that there was no mixing of races in ancient Britain, and he pulled down a hellfire from a historian of epic proportions. The apparent racist, Paul Joseph Watson, tweeted, "Thank God the BBC is portraying Roman Britain as ethnically diverse. I mean, who cares about historical accuracy, right?" End tweet. Well, that was enough for school to be put in session because writer and historian Michael Stuchberry also has a Twitter account. Mr. Stuchberry responded, "Seriously, are you somehow suffering an acquired brain injury or are you just playing a role for your mouth breather followers?" Okay, wait, there's more. Roman Britain was ethnically diverse, almost by design. To begin, occupying legions were drawn from other parts of the empire, end tweet.
They build new Roman towns, often in exactly the same places where native Britons have been living for thousands of years. With new Roman-style buildings, public baths, temples, marketplaces, and amphitheaters, where people can watch gladiators fight to the death.
Now, the tweet torch continues for a long, long, accurate time with incontrovertible evidence. And there's the rub. Actual facts and data telling a true story. That's what we have to stay vigilant about. Providing children with facts and data and truth, not fallacies and lies and emotionally crippled non-logic. Okay. What's up next? Next up, we shift gears into harder news, the Federal Reserve. The Fed held its monthly two-day meeting this week, and the results are dovish, with no interest rate hike in sight. So what else came of the meeting that investors seemed to fall in love with as they pushed Wall Street to all-time highs? Let's get under the hood on that right now.
Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate.com.
All right, the monthly two-day Federal Reserve meeting is over. They have released their statement. How about, in your words, you tell me what they said and what you saw?
I think the notable takeaways here, inflation definitely has the Fed's attention. In their last meeting in June, the Fed had noted concerns about softening inflation. The data has only gotten softer in the past month, and this statement reflected that. The bottom line is, I think the Fed's going to have a tough time raising short-term interest rates until inflation starts moving toward their 2% threshold rather than away from it like it's been in recent months. Likelihood is probably going to be much later in the year, probably December, before they raise rates again, if at all, this year, provided that inflation cooperates. The other point of note, they are really zeroing in on the start of this process of unwinding some of their bond holdings. They really have teed up for the September meeting the point where they're going to announce the start date. I would imagine, or I would expect, that that's going to come by October 1st.
Okay, so the other leg on the stool you mentioned from the report from the Fed is that they're going to move slow and steady and start selling off that enormous balance sheet of bonds. So that comes out, and then the bond rates go down, which is the opposite of what logic says probably should happen. So what is that about?
I think the market's reacting to the fact that the Fed, pretty dovish in their statement regarding short-term interest rates, that another short-term rate hike is not in the offing, it's not in the immediate future, and that it's likely going to be December before we get another rate hike. So I think that's what you're seeing the markets react to. The process of slowly dialing down that bond portfolio, it's going to be very gradual. They're only going to tiptoe into this once they start. So the likelihood is we're not really going to see, in my view, ramifications from this until we're one, two, 3 years in, because that's the point where the pace picks up and the cumulative effect really begins to mount. But the first 12 months, Janet Yellen says it's going to be like watching paint dry, and that's, you know, very likely to be, you know, what it's likely to be.
Yeah, they're not supposed to make big sudden changes, but I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. So 38% chance of a December rate hike, down from 50% before the report came out. Why am I wrong if I think that September should be the first rate hike for this year and then another in December? And I'm not asking you to take a side. I'm asking you to prove to me that a September rate hike is risky. Why?
Well, inflation's running really low. I mean, you know, we've got an economy that, you know, is still stuck in first gear. Inflation's running really low. The Fed's already raised rates twice this year and three times in the last 7 months. And these rate hikes take a while to sort of cycle through the economy and have that desired effect. So the risk of raising rates too much, you know, much more likely at this point than, you know, not raising them enough, particularly when they have this other tool at their disposal that they want to get started, and that is the downsizing of the balance sheet. Ultimately, they're going to be juggling or managing, however you want to look at it, two different tools of policy, the short-term interest rate and the winding down of the portfolio. So on the one hand, it gives them a lot of flexibility. On the other hand, it's going to give them a very full plate and you know, raise the risks of a misstep at some point down the road.
Like you said, slow and steady. So Greg McBride from Bankrate.com, chief financial analyst, I should add. Greg, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time again this week.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Always a pleasure.
That was Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. And that's it for this week's show. We almost didn't make deadline with this one because of the fun that producer Liana and I had pulling all the sound bites for the STEM You Can Stream segments.
You little smarty, you.
We hope you dig them as much as we did. If you want all of the STEM segments or any of our shows, we are also at Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Let us know what you think there. And you can also tell me why you think I'm wrong on how the revoking of net neutrality is a crime against the American economy. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, this has been Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton, and have great weeks, everybody.